Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. Summer in Wisconsin is powwow season, a time when Native Americans gather to dance, sing, and celebrate their history and traditions. The powwow is a special time for people to gather and celebrate, meet old friends, and create new friendships. In early times, hunters would invite their friends and relatives to share their good fortune, and as time went on, while the meal was being prepared, relatives would dance to honor their host. Eventually, dancing became the focus of the event, while participants displayed their weaving, quill work, and other finery. At times, they presented an opportunity for families to hold naming and honoring ceremonies as well. Though powwows have changed over the years, they remain important gatherings to share tribal traditions while bringing the circle of people closer to their family, friends, and Native American culture. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. In Wisconsin, most powwows are open to everyone, presenting incredible opportunities to experience and learn about traditions that date back thousands of years. Today, we take some time to learn about powwows, their history, the meaning behind each element involved, and how to participate respectfully when you attend. Because this program was pre-recorded, we won't be taking your calls today. Dr. Odawa White is the Dean of Continuous Improvement at Lucuderay Ojibwe College in Hayward. It's a school that provides education for Anishinaabe community members while advancing the language, culture, and history of the Ojibwe. Dr. White has been part of powwows since childhood. He's participated as both a fancy dancer and a grass dancer while singing with his father's drum group. Odawa, welcome to Route 51.
Miigwech, thank you. Gakana, we Ozabadi, Sindagu, Odawa, Indijnakaz, Minwa, Odawa Zagaiganing, Ndunjaba, Niminwendum, Oma Yayan, Niminwendum, Giwab Mai Goma, Ajajak and Dodame. But I'd just like to say Chimigwech, or big thank you for inviting me to speak today. It's just always an honor. I greeted you in my Ojibwe language, and I started out with Ozabadis is my spiritual name, or my Indian name that was given to me before I turned one, and an elaborate naming ceremony when I was younger. And then I said that I was from Lake of the Odawa, or Lacouderay, Lake of the Short Ear in French, next to Hayward, Wisconsin, in northern Wisconsin territory. I said I was glad to be here, glad to see everybody. Well, I can't really see everybody, but I'm just always glad to see everyone. And I also said that my clan is Crane, or Ajajak and Dodame. So I'm glad to be here and educate you. It's been a part of my life as far as powwows are concerned, and also any sort of culture or identity issues that might arise.
Well, there are a lot of things I'm looking forward to speaking with you about today. And I read some biographical information as I was preparing for today's program. And I immediately had to wonder, what is the difference between a fancy dancer and how is it different from a grass dancer? These are two very distinct things.
Okay, well, a fancy dancer is in the title itself. So it really the fancy dancer wants to stand out at different powwows. So you have really bright colors, some fluorescent, you'll see a lot of fluorescent colors. And so they're known for their really elaborate sort of style of dance, quick in steps and jumps and turns. And so you'll see that the fancy dancer is quite a spectacle at powwows. And grass dancers are too, in the sense of my dad always said that when you dance grass, you try to incorporate sort of a smooth style of dance. And so a grass dancer, of course, comes from, they're both sort of like warrior type origination style dances from traditional Western type styles of dance. And so they say that they come from warrior type style dances. The grass dance itself is, of course, comes from out west, and And it's supposed to represent sort of like the moves are supposed to represent the grass and the prairie. And so you kind of see like the movement of the grass. And when you see grass dancers at powwows, you see that movement, that type of style. And they also have like fringe hanging from their regalia, which is typical of grass. And so the history behind that is that some people say that it, young boys used to tuck grass in their belts, and they would stamp down the grass before any sort of traditional dance or whatever powwow that was going to take place. And so that's one sort of interpretations. There are many interpretations. It just depends on who you ask.
I'd like to ask you about the history of powwows. I've read some conflicting information about how they began and even what the word means. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, the powwow is, there's just a lot of information out there. Can't really pinpoint the meaning behind. Some people say powwow is an expression, and some people say it's an Algonquin term. Some people say it's say it originated in Canada. And so powwows to me, I mean, it is an expression, kind of like in an Ojibwe language where you say "hoa." It's an expression meaning that wow, that's great, or looks good, or it's just an expression. How I tie this together is through when I think of expression, I think of all the various tribes in the United States and Canada expressing themselves through song and dance. And some of the dance styles and the songs, they share like a really deep rooted sort of tradition. So you can kind of pinpoint back to the original style where it was more ceremonial related. And so these a lot of different elements of ceremony are tied into powwows. And then one in particular is just that sharing of knowledge and understanding. And so a lot of tribes, that's why they call it powwows sort of intertribal, because it brings together a lot of different tribes. You meet new friends, you see older friends that you've met in previous years. And sometimes it's the only time I see people that I've met a long time ago when I went growing up around here or anywhere else. And sometimes it's the only place that I see people. So bottom line is the powwow is an expression to me, and it's an opportunity to really shed a light on culture, you know, that has been, through the years has survived assimilation and other practices.
So in general terms, what is the purpose of the powwow, or does that differ depending on the type of powwow that we're talking about?
Yeah, it depends on the type of powwow. So if we're looking at, so Lacouderay in Hayward, Wisconsin, Lacouderay Reservation, we have a powwow called Honor the Earth Celebration, Homecoming Celebration. And it began as a powwow, sort of a protest powwow because of the winter dam that was created. And so that kind of flooded, it did flood a lot of reservation homelands, people. And so back in the early 70s, mid 70s, they formed a powwow to protest the winter dam. And it kind of started out, so it has some historical reference to the earth and understanding that we need to really honor our Mother Earth and protect Mother Earth and also our lands. And so it shows, it has a really deep history to that powwow. And so that's one of the biggest Midwest traditional powwows in the area. And so so that's just an example of one powwow with the history tied behind it. And other types of powwows are contest powwows. So contest powwows have more protocol. People in dance categories, Native people in dance categories will compete in different dance categories as well as their drum categories. And so so you have the contest and the traditional powwow. You have the powwows that remember certain people in different communities. And so there's just a lot of different powwows. There's a powwow going on every weekend in the United States and Canada.
I'm curious about the powwows themselves. Like, how is the MC chosen? That must be a big deal role, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, the master of ceremonies definitely. They have a huge reputation in Indian country for their knowledge and expertise, and as far as understanding the history and the different dance styles and the songs that go along with it. And so the MC is chosen just based off of their prowess, their voice, their understanding, mm-hmm. their ability to really draw in the crowd and the people, and to keep everything going, keeping our circle of life going, our songs, our dances, and also the dance categories. And so they're chosen just their knowledge and knowledge of language too. And so some MCs incorporate language in some of their leadership and also their jokes too, because master of ceremonies has the ability to tell jokes just to make sure that people are laughing and keeping all the social gathering going. And so there's quite a bit of there's a lot of decisions that have to be made, as far as, because I organized a powwow at University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire for many years, and that was always a difficult decision, trying to decide on a powwow MC, and it's just mainly the reputation and their knowledge and expertise in the areas of powwows, and most of them have danced or have been or have sang on different drum groups, so basically their reputation.
All right. Well, that makes sense, I guess. You're listening to Dr. Odawa White as we continue our discussion on the history and traditions of powwows on Route 51. Coming up, we'll hear more about some of the Ojibwe traditions associated with powwows and how these celebrations have evolved over the years. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
When you're dancing for the ones that can't dance anymore. That's what they say. So you dance hard, so the ones that are watching that can't dance, or the ones that aren't able to make it to the powwow, can feel those feelings from here. I really try to encourage younger, I call them little brothers, on the powwow trail. That's another reason I dance and sing, is to help motivate these young ones to carry on our traditions.
We are back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Dr. Odawa White is our guest today for a look at powwows during a time in which there are multiple opportunities to attend in communities throughout Wisconsin. I'd like to ask you to share your most memorable powwow experience. What stands out to you?
Okay, well, my most memorable powwow experience, there has been many. Probably one of the first times sitting with my father at a drum.
Can you remember how that felt?
It felt really empowering as far as a youth is concerned, because I've watched, you know, my dad and his drum group throughout the years, and so they have a huge reputation in Indian country, and they've traveled great distances, and we've been to a lot of different powwows, and so just learning different songs from them, and being able to sit down on a drum group to be able to sit down, it was really a great experience, I think. Another experience was I received an eagle whistle a while back when I was dancing grass, and that was one from one of the elders, and so that was kind of really moving experience for me. Otherwise, it's just been being able to, every time I go to a powwow, it's always a great experience to see others. That's one of my favorite parts, is just being able to see others that I haven't seen in quite some time, and it's just really a great experience to it's a great feeling when you enter the circle of life, they call it, the powwow arena.
I'll ask you about that circle in a little while. I think it's a very important part of this. You've been to powwows all over the place, and I'm curious how they're different in our area here in Wisconsin from other places like North Carolina or North Dakota, rather, Montana, Canada, other places that have powwows. Are they all very similar or are there distinct differences?
Well, it just depends. There's so many different types of powwows that are going on during the summertime. I would say that there might be some differences, like Ojibwe in this area believe that only men sing around the drum, and so that's part of one of the customs and in this area or in the arena. They believe that you don't carry a baby in the arena because the spiritual part of that is that you want that young person to enter the arena by themselves, and so that's another custom in this area that might not be something that maybe taught out west or down in the southwest. So it depends on what tribe is hosting too. It's a lot of, there's over 560 some tribes in the United States, over 650 in Canada, and so each has different sort of style as far as presenting powwows and memorials for people. And so that's part of just understanding that I always think that whatever local tribe or whatever local committee is they establish sort of what the rules are, and we have to accept that and also be able to enjoy ourselves during that time. So even though one tribe might believe something different, you have to accept that when you're actually attending and respecting, you know, their traditions and customs.
The regalia that is worn at a powwow is absolutely gorgeous. I have a friend who said, don't ever call it a costume. Can you explain the difference between regalia and a costume? This is not a costume we are seeing.
Right. And yeah, and the interpretation, yeah, some people will be offended if you call your regalia a costume, because costume is something that you might wear at during Halloween, you know. So mm-hmm. it's not as respected. So we put a lot of effort into our regalia. Some people, like I had mentioned earlier about the colors, some might incorporate the colors, some might incorporate different patterns in their beadwork. And just to give an example, like the floral design, the floral pattern is usually typical of woodland tribes and majority Ojibwe, but that's what's worn on like mainly the top of the moccasin. So mm-hmm. that's the floral pattern you can kind of tell, and puckered moccasin, you can tell that person is Ojibwe. But it there's just a so back to that costume. So there's just a lot of effort put into this. And I can just give you an example too. So my grandmother had said that, told my dad to represent his clan in his regalia. And so he always represents the Jajak or the Crane in his dance regalia. And so he has sort of a staff that he uses, and it's shaped in the shape of a crane, and so that's representative of his clan. So not everyone knows that, but that's just part of what he learned when he was younger. And at some point, I'll probably incorporate that into my regalia at some point. But my brother does because he wears a medallion that has a crane on it, and so he represents that in his own way in his dance regalia. And so sometimes it takes years to develop. I mean, beadwork will take, when you're doing beadwork, it's kind of a community thing. I mean, as far as, so, you know, like your mother, your sister, and, you know, my father does beadwork, and my wife, I was fortunate enough to marry my wife, Brandy Lone Tree, because she does just awesome, just spectacular work as far as beadwork and also sewing. So she sews a lot of the different outfits. And she sold a lot of different outfits or regalia for a lot of people in the area. So it brings a lot of different colors to the arena for sure.
Oh, I just, it's just beautiful. The diversity of powwow dances really, to me, seems to reflect the evolution of the tradition. I know only warriors danced at powwows in the beginning. What kinds of dances are there today that you wouldn't have seen years ago?
Okay, well, so like I said earlier, like the grass dance in this area, so there weren't that many. I think when I was a child, I think I saw maybe one grass dancer, and it was amazing because it was kind of eye opening because I didn't know that that style existed. And then 15 years later, you've seen a lot of grass dancers in the Midwest area. And so the tradition of the grass dance comes from, of course, out west, kind of looking at the prairies of grass. And some of the tradition behind that, or the story behind the grass dance, is that that the young boys used to wear grass in their belts, and they would stomp down the grass before any sort of ceremony or some sort of gathering. So that's one interpretation. I've heard so many different interpretations. One was it was a warrior dance, and so they're part of the warrior society. And so there's just a lot of interpretations of that dance style, but I'm fortunate enough today to be able to dance that style and to share my own sort of dance style in paying respect to other tribes that have shared that custom. So
well, I'm curious about the drummers. I know that you said that you remember sitting with your father and having that experience of the drumming for the first time. How do the drummers and singers learn the music they play? Are there rehearsals, or is this something they just learn over time when they're attending powwows? How does it work?
Yeah, I remember attending, they call it drum practice. So my dad and his drum group would practice at least two or three times a week to really hone in on their sound, and then also to make sure that everyone was on the same beat. And so there's that practice, and then you will have different gatherings too in communities. And so like, let's say, flag raising ceremonies or veteran ceremonies, and so they'll call on different, you know, the local drum groups to kind of be there to support everyone. And so that's another way of how you really develop your sound. And so but a drum group is it was founded, you know, like our Lakuri Badgers founded a while back, and it was just a group of cousins or family, and then it kind of blossomed from there. And so it kind of develops over time too.
The
songs are developed too, just through practice, but they also develop through they're different composers too around Indian country that compose songs for others, for other drum groups, or they're listening to other drum groups sound, or and practice some of their songs, usually the vocable songs. So there's just a lot of different factors that go into to the songs. It's and the sound of the drum. So, and that just reminds me of like the drum, of course. In Ojibwe, you say Ninde, which means like my heart. And so when you say Dewegun, it refers to that heart sounding. And so that's when you go to a powwow, that's what it represents is the sound of a heart.
You mentioned a vocable song. What do you mean by that?
Vocables is sort of a traditional style song, and I know there's some word songs, so they call those contemporary songs, and so they'll incorporate some of the language of the local tribe or any tribes that the drum group arrives from or derives from. So So there, I mean, vocal bowls are just sort of like a sound, you know, like just just like when you sing at choir, you know, you have different types of sounds and different levels you want to attain. And so it's the same sort of comparison.
A little while ago, you mentioned the circle, and I know the circle is an important symbol to Native Americans. It's evident at many large powwows. Dancers are at the center of the circle. So tell us a little bit about the circle and its meaning to the Native American culture.
Okay, well, the circle represents that circle of life when you begin as an infant and then, or a newborn, and then as an older person. And so all these different sort of teachings that you learn as a young child really is representative of that circle of life. So you learn, you observe others, you learn from others, you listen to others, you respect others. And so all of these different sort of traditions that you learn at ceremonies and going to powwows, you learn that circle of life is really, really precious and important. And so you really try to express yourself in the best way you can, smile all the time and greet others. And there was this teaching that I heard that if you see an elder, go say hi to them, maybe extend your hand, because that also extends their life. And so, and you can kind of understand just what I'm talking about right now is some of the feelings that I feel when I go to powwows and enter that circle of life.
I read that dancing was one of the first aspects of Native American culture to kind of come under criticism by missionaries and the federal government. And in the 1800s, the federal government forbade most forms of dancing. They feared it. They feared that it was all associated with war dancing, especially the ghost dance. How did tribes overcome that obstacle and get people to understand what these dances really meant?
Sure. Well, I just feel that, yeah, there was some criticism and from missionaries, and even some of our ceremonial drums were some had to be held secretly, and so that was part of that. There was just a lot of different experiences that people had, and that also kind of eradicated some of our ceremonial drums here, because I feel that took away from some of the people attending our ceremonial ceremonies, and so we lost some things that as we moved on with our with conducting, you know, like our ceremonies and passing on our drum to younger people and learning those traditions. So even though like the language itself, I feel that that it was difficult for, because of boarding schools and forbading Indian people from speaking a language that I feel like that some of the generation had been lost as far as speaking a language. And so we're fortunate enough here at Lacouture that there's a lot of revitalization going on. Our K through our schools, like Waduka Dotting, even our Lacouture Tribal School, where we have Dr. Migazee Sullivan, who's teaching Ojibwe language and revitalizing language. So I mean, even though we've faced some of those back then, I really respect, that's why I respect my ancestors, my grandfather and my grandmother, because they really paved the way for us and protected some of those traditions that our family uses today. And so I feel that we are strong people, and that because of that knowledge and understanding of of our traditional ways, like using our tobacco and making sure that our drums and songs stay alive throughout the years. And so we're pretty strong, resilient people today.
Are religious ceremonies still part of powwows today, or naming ceremonies, honoring ceremonies, or are those now separate?
No, well, I know that some powwows honor, like outgoing royalty, or they'll honor certain individuals that have made a difference in the community. Some powwows honor, they'll honor veterans. And so there'll be a lot of like gift giving to some of these, some of the people that are in the community making a difference. And so that's part of that tradition.
You're listening to Dr. Odawa White on Route 51 for a discussion on powwows, their history and traditions. Coming up, what to know before you go. Because this program was pre-recorded, we won't be taking your calls today. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Powwows are used as a means to educate people. That's why they're so open to the public and everything. A lot of people classify Native Americans as, they're all Indians. Well, no, we're all from different nations that are all really, really different. We all have different languages. We all have different ways of life, and we're completely different. Just from being on the Powwow Trail, you get to learn so much about different Native nations. When I was just a little guy, I'd watch those men's traditional dancers, and they always had a big impression on me, And I always saw them as, like almost like the protectors of the powwow. It's almost like I'm hunting, especially when you do the sneak up. You're out there looking for your prey or for your wawashkeshi. We call that. That's our word for deer.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward with our guest, Dr. Odawa White. Today, we are hearing all about powwows and the way they bring communities together while teaching important lessons about tribal traditions. Because this program was pre-recorded, we won't be taking your calls today. I have to admit something to you. I've seen so many pictures and videos from powwows. I have never been to one myself. I have always wanted to go. So take me through the experience. What can I expect from the moment I arrive? What happens?
Okay, from the moment you arrive, well, first of all, you have to listen to the master of ceremonies, as they'll let you know what is happening, what to do, when to stand. And so when grand entry begins, I'm going to back up, because I don't want to think about like when I'm getting dressed and to the time I start lining up for a grand entry. And I feel that feel sort of empowered as far as my history and my culture and language, and feeling the sense of sort of this power that when you go to a powwow, you feel proud of yourself, you feel proud of your identity. And so these are some of the feelings I feel when I'm getting dressed and when I'm lining up in grand entry. And so I feel I can't wait to enter the arena, kind of feel that sort of energy from others, because when you do enter the arena, you just feel this sense of like excitement of some sort, this feeling. And so I don't necessarily see any of the guests or anything around me besides what's happening right immediately in the powwow arena. And so when, if you're attended a powwow for the first time, that's how you're feeling. And so that's why I feel that people love attending powwows, because they can also feel that sort of energy coming from our circle of life, as well as the drums that really create that sense of uplifting feeling for others. And so I feel that that's why people love powwows, even visitors from different areas, non-Indians, and they just love seeing the colors that are pretty vibrant, that really provide that sense of I want to say revitalization, because like you said, we had talked about earlier that assimilation piece. I feel that when people do express themselves, they sort of want to tell everyone that we're here, we're still here, we still have our rights, we still have our treaty rights, and we still have our language. And so that's part of everything that we're doing when you experience a powwow. So I really get excited when I see people, because that's like the number one priority. Like I see my family members, I see my friends every year. You know, I see my parents are there, and so it's always a really excellent feeling. And so I also see our flag staffs that are really important. Our First Nation flag staff, which are only carried in by veterans. And so when the powwow begins, veterans are really important to our community, and we've always honored veterans really highly, and they're our warriors of our society. They protect our powwows, they protect our lands, they protect everything. So they're really important in our community, and we honor them by allowing them to only possess, you know, like our eagle feathers, and also have that authority to give out eagle feathers. And so sometimes you'll see that at a powwow too, where veterans might give out a feather to somebody that has done something in significance in their life. And so they offer that protection and that sort of that protection of that eagle. And so that's just part of everything that we're a part of as far as our customs are concerned, or our culture.
Sure. A dear friend of mine who is Ojibwe told me that there are no spectators at a powwow. He said everyone is a participant. And would you agree with that? What do you think he meant?
Yes, everyone's a participant. Even our vendors from outside, they're participants. And our spectators also, you'll hear our master of ceremonies introduce what they call an intertribal. And so they'll invite everybody out to dance, regardless of where you're from, Indians, non-Indians. So everyone is invited to participate. And so I always say it's just a couple. If you can't dance, you know, just walk into the arena. It's too hard to dance. Otherwise, it's 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. So.
You mentioned gifts earlier. I'm curious, should spectators also give gifts? Is that something that's traditionally done?
It depends. If you're asking, it's always a good practice. If you don't know much about the dance style, it's always a good practice to ask. Most people I know want to tell you about their dance regalia. And so it's always good to kind of trade off a gift of some sort. Sometimes, I mean, even with like pictures. So me, a friend and I, he's a traditional dancer. We were standing talking, and somebody, a spectator, asked us to take a picture. And he said, for a lemonade. And so they ended up buying us lemonade. And I thought that was like the best thing, because sometimes people take pictures and then don't really acknowledge or provide any sort of, not everyone's expecting that, but it's always nice to receive some sort of support in some way.
Sure. I'd like to talk a little bit about the rules. Are there things that people should not do when they attend? Are there some definite don'ts when it comes to attending a powwow in person?
Well, yeah, there's some don'ts. One is make sure that you listen to the master ceremonies. So one don't is do not touch a person's regalia unless they are open to that. And another one is just don't make assumptions right away that are sort of stereotypical of mainstream society and Indian people. And so one of those is, I can just give you an example. I'm a grass dancer. I was dancing in a powwow. I'm not going to say where, but I was standing next to this sort of contraption. I don't know what it's, some kind of game where if you make a hoop, then this water falls or whatever.
Okay.
And a spectator had came up to me and said, can I get a picture of you next to this waterfall or when the water falls? Because aren't you a rain dancer? And I just kind of walked away. It's not something that you, I mean, just, it would be better to ask to sure. what your dance style is. And so some of that, I mean, that's a huge stereotype, you know,
like, sure.
we don't dance for, you know, like there's some traditional dances that are done, but that's sort of like a stereotype that, especially in the Midwest area.
Mm-hmm. Well, what should the spectator wear? I mean, is there anything that would be considered inappropriate for someone, a non-native person, to wear if they attend?
I think it's pretty casual. I would say, you know, like make sure you're wearing a shirt and pants.
Fully clothed.
Fully clothed.
Fair enough. Are all powwows open to the public or just some?
Oh, all powwows are open to the public. Contest, traditional, all powwows are open. I think one of the biggest powwows I've been to is a Gathering of Nations in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And that's just thousands of tribes represented, and they call it the biggest powwow in North America. And so that was one of the quite a big, huge gathering. And so there's people from the Southwest, East Coast, West Coast, everywhere.
Wow. You mentioned tobacco earlier, and I know this is a part of the powwow experience. What's the symbolism there? What is the meaning behind the tobacco?
Oh, the like a sema is or tobacco is used. And some people smoke it in their pipes, but some people just use it loosely. And there's different types of traditional tobacco, but it's important in our ceremonies. So it's kind of like a messenger to our spirits. So I recognize our spirits, our money doog, they call them. And also when you're asking something, if you're asking somebody to do something for you or for their knowledge, it's always, you always have to provide or offer that tobacco to them because then that kind of solidifies that request to that person. And so that's typically primarily in this area.
How does hosting a powwow really contribute to the connectedness of the tribal community or even to forming new connections with friends?
Well, I really feel that a lot of our values, our traditional values, are incorporated into our powwow. Like I had mentioned earlier, the drum, our tobacco, our eagle feathers, our stories, our songs, all of these are connected to really strengthening our identity as a people. And so it's kind of brings together that sort of healing of our community, because there's negative stuff that happens out there everywhere in society. And so this really kind of brings that together, that importance of family, because there are a lot of huge families that attend powwows. And so it always incorporates all these values to help strengthen our identity, make sure that we carry on and pass on these traditions to our next generation. And so that's always been a priority, is making sure that our language, our sema, our beliefs, everything is passed on to that next generation. And some people call it the seventh generation. So everything that we do now, we ought to make sure that it's protected for that seventh generation moving forward.
Does everyone in the tribe participate?
Not everyone in the tribe participates. There are a few that don't dance. There are a few that don't sing. It just depends on your background and what you want to do. And some people will start attending powwows. They'll observe and then ask, you know, elders. They'll take that tobacco or saimon. They'll ask people how, you know, if they should start, you know, with a particular dance style or if they might ask them to teach them to sing or even to dance. And so not everyone goes to powwows. And that's another sort of stereotype too, is that not every Indian person goes to powwows, and it's more of like a contemporary sort of celebration, because a lot of tribes have real traditional type ceremonies. Here in Lakuture, we have our Chidewegun or our big drum ceremonies. And then we also have our Madewin Lodge or our medicine lodge that happens usually in the summer. But those are more like our traditional ceremonies, a lot of protocol and so, but with a lot of incorporating some of those values into the contemporary powwow today. And that's one in particular is our feast. And so we have a feast, traditional feast, and we feed people. And so that just becomes a part of that whole community relationship and establishing those relationships and healing.
You mentioned some misconceptions. Are there any other misconceptions that people might have about powwows that you think should be cleared up, things that you wish that they would know?
I wish just the fact that our traditions are still alive today. And so that's because a lot of like, I mean, I taught to at University Wisconsin-Eau Claire a couple courses here and there in American Indian Studies, and some students had, you know, mentioned that they thought all Indians still live in teepees, and so that's not true, or some might suggest that Indians aren't alive today because they don't have their language or their culture, but that also is not true. When you go to powwows, you can kind of see that our, you know, our different dance styles, our songs, our drums are still alive. So that's what I really would
In our last 30 seconds or so, you've been to powwows all over the place. There are so many in Wisconsin. What are some favorites that you'd like to mention that people should have on their radar?
Some favorites are going to be biased, but our Lakuture, we have our homecoming celebration powwows. It's usually the third weekend in July. There's another one that's going on this weekend or next weekend, July 1st through the 3rd, Red Cliff traditional powwow, and then Oneida Nation Contest powwow in Oneida, Green Bay area. So there's just a number of powwows in the Midwest. Last weekend was a celebration in Hinckley, and that was a contest powwow. And so those are all powwows. There's not one that really stands out. I just like enjoying going to powwows. In particular, of course, the Lakuture Honored Earth powwow.
Of course. You're listening to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, extending a sincere thanks to our guest, Dr. Odella White. Our producers are Joy Ratch-Kramer and Kate Spranger. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Joy is our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program as well as our previous programs at wpr.org/route51. You can also subscribe to our podcast. It's available from your favorite platform. If you have an idea for a future program, email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, we'll be back with another fascinating discussion, and we hope you'll join in. Until then, we're heading out of town.
Special music today on Route 51 from the Lakuture Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and Midnight Express. Special audio from the classroom media resource, The Ways, from PBS Wisconsin Education.